Good morning and welcome to Race Industry Now, the weekly webinar series from ePortrade, presented to you by ARP, Performance Plus Global Logistic, Peak, Fifth Third Bank Motorsport, and ShopMonkey. I am Francisque Savinien, the founder and CEO of ePortrade, the global platform for the performance and racing industry. This is episode 330. And we're going to be talking fire suppression with FSE, Fire Suppression Engineering. With me this morning are Brad Gilley, our wonderful host, and Judy Keane, our co-founder. Judy?
Thank you, Francisque, and thank you for everybody joining us today. I'm excited because I have two very good friends based in North Carolina that are presenting today. So I'm excited to see what they have to say on safety. But I do want to remind everybody, this platform is very similar to a trade show. We have hundreds upon hundreds of suppliers showcasing their goods, just like if they were exhibiting. So if you're a buyer, be sure to log on. You're able to reach out to them directly, ask questions, become a dealer. That's why they're exhibiting on this platform. So, Mr. Brad, good to see you.
Great to see both of you as well. Thank you very much. I'm actually really excited about today, because to me, and people have heard me say this before here in the last 3 years or so of these webinars, that when it comes to race cars, and I always used to tell people back when I was running a race car dealership, that first money should always be spent on safety. Everyone's thinking about, well, what makes me go fast? And boy, do I really have to pay that much for a helmet, or is there one cheaper? And I know Scott Heinz and I were even talking about as much yesterday ahead of the webinar today. But safety, especially what we're going to talk about today, is going to be a big thing. So I really look forward to it. And thank you both.
Excellent. I see Scott and David. So as soon as we can bring David on as well, then we are going to let you take over, Brad.
All right. Well, that sounds great. As we're getting David on, there he is. Today's title is Pull It, Making Drivers Feel Safer About Discharging Their Systems. And joining us is Scott Heinz, the president and owner of FSE, and David Green, safety inspection official in NASCAR, and of course, a former racer in his own right, or I'll just say a racer in his own right. How about that? Maybe that's a little more fair. But anyway, Scott, David, welcome. And Scott, let me just turn it over to you real quick. Give us an overview of what we're going to be talking about here today.
All right. Good afternoon, Brad, guys. It's a pleasure to be here. What we're going to be talking about this afternoon with my friend David Green is trying to educate drivers and racers to pull it, activate that system. A lot of sanctioning bodies and racetracks are mandating fire suppression systems for race cars. And over the years, there's just kind of been a thought process of from a driver's standpoint that they really didn't want to touch that extinguisher. They just wanted to get out of the race car. And I understand that. And David probably can elaborate on that some too as a driver. Your seconds are precious, especially when you're in a fire. And so the main thing a driver wants to do is try to get all the stuff that they have now. They have a Hans, they have radio stuff, they have all this stuff. So it takes a little bit of time to get out. But some of the agents that were used in the past were really caustic, really hard to take in and be around when they were activating and trying to put out a fire. So over the years, drivers hadn't really worried about activating the system. They just want to get out of the race car. And so some of the systems and some of the agents used today are much safer, much better, easier to be around when they're being active and trying to put out a fire. And so we're just trying to re-educate drivers to take that extra step in pulling that cable or pushing that knob or whatever your activation mechanism is. And David's done a good job of trying to spread that word in NASCAR to remove some very important parts and pieces so the system can be activated before they got on the racetrack.
Yeah, well, David, we all know that all of racing is continuing to make race cars much more safer. But, there never is any guarantees. And last year, we certainly saw something thrilling that we're very thankful for with Jordan Anderson and his fire that we saw in the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series race. But give us an overview of some of the things that are on your mind here today.
Well, thanks, Brad. Good morning or good afternoon to everyone. And thanks, Scott, for having me join you today. I think, Brad, sort of like what Scott touched on, is if I put my driver's helmet back on, I look at that scenario like Scott's talking about, several things. The agent that we used back in the day was far more harmful for not only the race car, but probably the driver and inhaling this, that, and another. Then we always had that crew chief in our ear, right? That if something happened, it kind of self-programmed us to just get out of the vehicle. So the crew chief would holler if you set that thing off, because it would, you know, flood the inside of the car, truck, or whatever we might be, the application might be. So then us as drivers just programmed to get out, right? So, and Scott touched on the new agents. And I think in our world, most recently last fall at Talladega with Jordan Anderson in the Craftsman Truck Series race event. If you replayed that scenario, that Jordan himself would say, hey, you know, I left something on the table. You know, I had a 5-pound agent, 5-pound bottle full of agent that could have, you know, given me a few more seconds in kind of diagnosing what was going on and my plan of attack as far as getting out of the vehicle. So that kind of enlightened us again that, hey, we just need to stay on top of it. And like Scott said, to educate not only the drivers, but the crew chiefs, spotters, everybody involved with the vehicle, that those are there, those items are there to help us, to help the driver, help the equipment, fellow competitors, so on and so forth. So we learned a lot on that scenario, and we've taken steps further now to make sure those things are on the mind of the driver as soon as that transpires.
Yeah. And, you know, even though David is with NASCAR, this certainly isn't just a NASCAR thing. This is all forms of motorsports. And I would even say people who are driving performance cars on the street. I can't tell you how many YouTube videos and social media posts I've seen with burnt up Ferraris and Hellcats and all kinds of other things. So there's a good reason why you should be thinking about this, whether it be for your race car or your performance car. I do want to let anyone watching know that if you have a question for either David or for Scott, you could always type into the chat. We'll get to as many as we can. And David, Scott said at some point you might even have a little bit of a video or something for us. If you do, just let us know when you want to play something like that as well, and we'll get to it. But Scott, I know we talked about, you know, some of the old agents and maybe some of the things that people have in their mind about what a fire suppression is and the negatives to it. But let's talk about, you know, how we got here, how you got started in this business as well.
I've been in the parts business for, well, since I was 12 with my dad and my uncle. I'm 55, so do the math. It's been a little bit. As far as fire suppression stuff, I was working with another company years ago, probably about early 2000s, I would guess, late 90s, early 2000s, and just kind of took a liking to the way fire extinguishers, fire suppression systems worked and were mounted. And so this particular company set up an East Coast Service Center in my shop. And this was right back around when NASCAR decided they were going to add another bottle to the car. They just had a 5-pound, and then sometimes they would put another 5-pound in the fuel cell area. But they decided to go to a 5-pound dedicated pull cable system for the driver, and then a 10-pound system that they could run a line, a thermally activated sensor, a bulb similar to what you see in a building or a hotel sprinkler system. And so that you could run one line mandatory to the fuel cell, but it was optional to run it to the engine. That optional word in the rule book, David can say most teams aren't going to do it because it's optional. It's not required. So that's when we started building a lot more systems. And that's about the time that the EPA banned halon in any kind of motorsports area. And so SFI, who does all the testing here in the States, banned halon in any of their SFI approved systems. So the companies had to go out and research other agents. And so we had a system where if you brought in your bottle, we would drain the old halon out and then refill it with an approved EPA regulated agent. And so kind of just transferring agents from one bottle out of a bottle and back into the same bottle. So that kept us busy. Around 2019, I decided to kind of start my own deal with a former member of the other, owner of the other company. And so we started FSC in 2019, right here near Charlotte Motor Speedway. And so I was already doing a lot of stuff with the NASCAR team. So it just kind of was an easy transition. Got SFI approved, obviously, and then started selling a lot of systems to other forms of racing, dirt late models, drag cars. I even have an aircraft company that I do some stuff with. And so it's just kind of taken off. I kind of have been known as the fire bottle guy in this area. And so people have questions or concerns or want to ask me something, they usually call. And so I'm here to help. I have nothing bad to say or nothing negative to say about any competitive company. There's some great other companies that do similar to what I do, and they do a great job. And so just kind of doing that, and it's just kind of grown exponentially, and it's been really exciting.
Yeah, David, let me ask you, you know, Scott was talking about sort of how things have evolved inside of a NASCAR stock car. Where are we right now exactly with what the regulations do require, and as far as how you've kind of seen it evolve in the sport as well?
Yeah, Brad, I think over time here, we have taken the opportunity through all of our national series, I can speak for firsthand, and then obviously the trickle-down effect with the touring, local Saturday night stuff, whatnot, is going to the extreme. And as we're speaking, I wanted to pull up to make sure I get all my wording right. We've mandated the location of the 5-pound fire bottle handle and the discharge. As Scott touched on, our 10-pounder is thermal activated, which will set that unit off or, you know, under a certain temperature. That services the back of the vehicle. Presently, we have the fire pound system that services the driver's area. I know ARCA is looking at doing some stuff under the hood, which would be some thermal stuff under the hood. We presently do not do that. Don't foresee that happening in the national series, but that 5-pound system, we mandated the location of that handle. And in simple language or simple terms to the driver is you should be able to be strapped in the vehicle, blindfolded, dark shield down, and be able to find that handle automatically. And so if you envision that 12-inch circumference around the shifter handle, would be sort of where that handle would be located. I think specifically we call out the right side of the seat, the right side of the leg board, obviously dash panel in the middle of the vehicle. Again, just envision that shifter handle and kind of right in that central location based on that. But the key would be as the driver strapped in, you know, that's probably one of our biggest issues we find with teams. They will mount that system or that handle in an area that the driver can reach it, but he's not strapped in the vehicle. So we got to envision being strapped in and be able to go to that thing right away.
You know, Scott, you and I were talking yesterday, you know, that handle is obviously a very important piece. And, you know, what David is saying makes perfect sense. Whenever you're strapped in tight to the vehicle, it is easily accessible. But what have you seen? Maybe some mistakes that people have made along the way as far as where they put that?
Well, a lot of times they put it somewhere where they want to move it in a certain part of the race car for weight. You know how racers are. They're very weight conscious. It's grams, not pounds. And so they'll want to put that thing maybe low light and left. Out of the way. Sometimes they'll want to put it, you know, behind the seat. I think David's seen a few instances where, you know, cables have been mounted somewhere behind the driver and you're not going to try to get to that or even make an attempt. Some people, and I was going to show you the bottle, how the bottle works, the top of the activation of the mechanism. Some of them would just not even worry about putting a cable in it. There's a safety pin that goes in the head that I'll show you here in just a second. So they would leave that safety pin in and run a flag or a tag away from that and use that to pull. And a few years ago, NASCAR said, no, this is a pull cable system. You got to have a pull cable mounted somewhere easily accessible. So I'll show you this right quick. This is kind of the head of a 5-pound bottle here. And you'll see there's a safety pin in the top. There's another hole adjacent to it that the pull cable goes in, like so. And so when you slide the pull cable in, you can pull that safety pin out. Okay. And so that's, can everybody see that? Hopefully that's kind of how that works. And so once you slide the cable in, you can take that safety pin out. And there's a mechanism that holds a plunger up that will hold it in place. So I tell people that call all the time, I don't want to set this thing off. And I said, as long as you got the safety pin in, you can pull the cable out. If you got the pull cable in, you can pull the safety pin out. And so and there's been instances where cars have gone on a racetrack with that safety pin in. If that safety pin's in, that pull cable's not going to work. Just trying to, again, make everybody, they're spending money for these systems. A lot of them, they're mandated. You've got to run them. And we're just trying to change the mindset of, I'm scared to pull this thing, or I don't have time. I just want to get out of the race car. And I understand that. And David understands that as a driver. But it's just very important that this thing is mounted correctly, that the cable is not bound up. The cables usually come 10 or 15 foot, and you cut them to length. As long as it's, you know, you can get to that T-handle and pull it within reach. And David's done a good job of trying to require cables to be mounted in certain, only just two or three areas where the driver can get to it buckled in.
Is there any way that you should point the direction of the bottle, you know, where
everything's Well, that's maybe a whole nother webinar as far as nozzle and sensor placement. You know, over the years, again, driver always says, look, I want a nozzle pointing directly at me. I just want to make sure a nozzle is pointing directly at me. And I kind of liken it to an example of, all right, let's say you're standing and you're burning a pile of brush and it you lose control of it and it flames up and it's out of control and you got a 5-gallon bucket of water. It's like you standing beside the fire and dumping the bucket of water on your head. That's not doing anything, okay? You want to get the agent and what's going to extinguish that fire to the fire. I'm okay with the nozzle being pointed somewhere in the cockpit, maybe towards the floorboard, especially if it's fuel's coming, if the fire's coming from the firewall, from the engine towards you. But that mentality of having a nozzle pointing at a driver. And there's another thing too, where drivers wouldn't pull the pin because they've heard stories over the years of a driver pulling it and all the agent goes on him and he can't breathe and he can't see and he's choking and he's gagging. And it's just not smart. You want to put those nozzles, you want to take that water and you want to put it towards the fire before it gets to you, instead of putting it on you and here comes the fire. So that's another thing I'd like to see, is just some nozzle placement 101, I guess.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, you were talking about the agents before. You know, if you look at the fire triangle that we all learned in school, yep. You know, you have heat, oxygen, and fuel.
Correct.
And I know some of the older ones would literally just suck all the oxygen out of the room, which, you know, if you're trying to breathe, that's not a good thing. But sure. How do these work? Do they neutralize the fuel? Do they you know, cover up oxygen from getting to it? How does it work? Especially when it comes to a driver who might be concerned about them not being able to breathe.
Well, a lot of these agents nowadays are flooding agents. And what they do is they actually flood the fire. They surround the fire and they take a lot of the fire properties away from it and keep it from flashing back up, cool it down. The agent that we use mostly is Novec 1230, which is made by 3M. And what that does is it basically just completely flushes the fire, I guess sprays around it, and the fire just kind of dies out. And there's some bubbling and there's some heat going on there, but what it's doing is just keeping it from, like you said, the triangle, the oxygen down, the heat down, and that way it's not gonna flash back up. It doesn't necessarily seek out fire per se. I know there's been some advertisements that it kind of finds the fire and puts it out. Well, you got to put it towards the fire. It's not going to do that, but it does have some properties in it that eliminate the things that cause a fire to continue to burn. So that's kind of that.
Yeah. David, do you want to add anything to that at all?
Yeah. To touch on a couple of things Scott said, when we look at the bottle placement, obviously, in the Cup Series car, the trucks and the Xfinity cars, their location is a little bit different. It's mandated in Cup to be on the lower right-hand corner down by the firewall. In Xfinity and truck, it can be on the right side floorboard, the tunnel area, the six bar, which is the lower crossbar on the roll cage behind the seat. But in all these applications, I think it's worthy of noting, to touch on what Scott was saying, was the head of the bottle should always either be mounted up or It can be mounted level, but I think there's about a 3-degree tolerance that we have as far as the head going downward. So I always shoot for being level to uphill on the bottle head. And then obviously the orientation of the bottle in the car, in our case, the Xfinity series and the truck series, the head of the bottle should always be pointed inboard, never outboard toward the outside of the car, never should be mounted on the right side frame rail or the door bars or something like that. You know, we'll see on a road course to where the guys will typically try to move the bottles to the right. And we understand that, but we have to stay within the frame rails and the door bars of the car with the head of the bottle mounted inboard. Scott probably told me this story a couple of years back, but anytime a system is mounted with the bottle head downward, it's sort of like an aerosol can. If you're spray painting something, then you flip the can upside down, it'll go for just a smidge and then it just kind of goes away. So that's kind of what we look at on the mounting. I did have a couple pictures. It might be a good time for those to show some scenarios with our handle in our pen. this one's very interesting.
It's the first time I've seen this, David.
Okay. This is very interesting. We found this last year. I will say it's a Cup Series car. And if you look closely, everything looks okay. It's got the nice 5-pound handle. It says fire on it. It's mounted to where the driver can reach it, strapped in the vehicle. But if you look closely, the pin is run the wrong direction. Or basically, the relationship to the pin and the leg board makes it impossible to pull the pin. So that's a heads up. As Scott said, you know, number one, first and foremost, when our cars get to the racetrack and we start our inspections, the pin in the 5-pound bottle will then be removed, because if that's not removed, and granted the cable's in there, like Scott mentioned, but if that 5-pound bottle pin is not removed, it doesn't matter what the driver's going to do or how he can do it, it is not going to work. So at the bottle, that pin's removed. And then up till this year, we've actually let the drivers navigate through pulling this pin at the handle upon him using the 5-pound system. Looking back at a couple of scenarios we had last year, and again, Jordan Anderson's truck, situation at Talladega, we learned a lot from, is going into 2023, we now mandate that this pin is removed while the car's on the track or the vehicle's on the track. So picture number two might show kind of what we're looking at here in 2023. So this is not the same vehicle, but very similar in application and mounting. This one to the leg board. You see the pin is correctly installed into the handle. And then this year we have mandated the red tag that's on that pin. I think most of your systems, and Scott, you can verify this or confirm this, but most of the systems come with a little flag of some sort. But again, here in 2023 in our national series of NASCAR, we mandate this remove before on track. We can't see the track part of the wording on the flag, but so this actually means the interior person, the driver can remove this at any point. Actually, the driver could remove it driving down pit road, right, to start the event. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, our guys do a nice job of removing this this pin once the car is presented for the event. The picture number one there was really a good indication of how everything was in place, but if that driver needed to use that system, it was not going to work, or he was not going to be able to get the pin out to pull the handle. So.
Yeah, that's a great illustration of definitely something to look for. You know, Scott, with a lot of these things, you know, we've talked about 5-pound bottles. We've talked about 10-pound bottles. We've talked about where some things are and different ways in activating the system. You know, what are some areas of the race car that people should look at, and what should they be looking at for those areas?
To install the system?
Yeah, or where to put it, you know, what goes where, those types of things.
Well, you want to put it somewhere where it's not going to see the elements of the racetrack. Lucas Oil and Dirt Late Model and World of Outlaws, they mandate a 10-pound system. And before they implemented those, they decided they were going to mount those in an area which there's very few places that you can put one on a dirt late model. But they kind of put them outside, and a lot of them see a lot of rocks and dirt. And I get some systems back that are beat up pretty good. But you want to kind of put those in a place where you can get to them easily, take them in and out of the car easily, inspect the gauge easily. You know, if it's an SFI system, which the majority of them are, 17.1, 17.3 is the new sprint car spec. They have to be recertified and checked out and inspected every 2 years. So at least every 2 years, you're going to be taking that bottle out and putting it back in. And then they expire for good at 6 years. So at the end of 6 years, if you're an SFI manufacturer, you cannot recertify or reinspect a bottle that's 6 years old. So keeping that in mind, you want to keep it somewhere where you can get to it. Obviously, if it discharges, get the thing out and refill it. But, you know, you want to mount it somewhere where it's, and like I said, drivers want to put it in a certain place. What is it? Light, low, and left. So a lot of them can't mount them on the left side. So anywhere that they mount that thing, just somewhere where it kind of is not going to get beat up crawling in and out of the race car. So, and another thing too, I expounded on a little bit yesterday when I talked to you briefly, was, you know, all the things of the race car that carry fuel cell, fuel lines, overflows, vents. You know, you can put in a system in a race car, but if your fuel lines and your fuel system is not up to spec and is made out of, you know, rubber hose or clamp, you know, hose clamps, you know, that's just another thing that's going to cause an issue if you have a fire. It's just going to burn up and it's going to be worse than it is. So if you have a good fuel line, a braided covered line, Nomex covered line, something that's going to kind of keep that fire from and keep the fuel from coming out of that hose if it gets hot, is also very important too.
Yeah, great point. By the way, I do want to remind anyone who is viewing right now, if you do have a question for either Scott or David, feel free to type it into the chat. We'll ask as many as we can. David, when it comes to inspecting some of these, you've shown a great example of what not to do. What are some other things to look at? And I don't know if this still happens in the top series, but have you ever run across, or for anyone who might be in any other series, things that really look like fire bottles, but actually are not, and they give you some great weight where you need it?
Yeah, great point, Brad. Yeah, to touch on that real quickly, so that doesn't lose my train of thought, would be, you know, we fortunately in the Cup Series, we do a lot of inspections. We do a lot of post-race inspections. We do a lot of pre-race, but for example, yesterday we brought two vehicles back from Atlanta. This would be the third post-race teardown we've done for the year. And we pretty much, once the series got back over on the East Coast here, we'll pretty much do that each week. We'll randomly pick a couple cars to bring back. So part of that process would be, you know, disassembling basically the whole car, right? So under my area, the safety side of it, you know, we pull all safety devices out of the vehicle, all the way from the seat, you know, window net, seat belts, seat rails, seat bracketry, and fireballs. So I've probably weighed as many as Scott has certified in the last few years. So we constantly weigh those bottles. We don't dig in really deeply if what's in that bottle, that would be determined by the weight of it, correct? So yes, we keep a good track of how those should be. And obviously, if there's a question, you know, Scott's a phone call away. We have not found anything that's suspicious in those manners. So, but we'll keep checking them out, right? But to add to all that, I think I made a note here to jump back a few minutes. Conversation a minute ago was the mounting of it and the direction of 5-pounders. So it's one thing we do see a lot of variance in is, if you remember earlier, I'd mentioned in the Xfinity series and the truck series, we have basically the same mounting areas that you mount this bottle in. So let's just say, for example, the team decides to mount the bottles behind the seat, which is a common installation for a lot of the trucks and Xfinity cars, and used to be in cup till we mandated the right front corner. But a system that's mounted behind the seat on the 5-pound side of it, you should always be running a discharge line, you know, whether that's 12 inches, 24 inches, whatever it might be. You probably would not want to discharge the bottle through a direct spray nozzle right in behind the seat. So that's one part of it. And as the teams elect to use a discharge line, you know, one common thing we see that's not good is fastening that line to the roll bars or whatever you're fastening to it with using plastic zip ties. When things heat up, the plastic melts. And then let's say you got a 24-inch discharge line on that 5-pound hand bottle, and now that thing's whipping around like a like, you know what? So we strongly urge to use like a steel ADL clamp or something secure to hold it to that bar. Then your nozzle end would direct it to the source of the flame or the fire. So that brings up my last point is, anytime I see a nozzle pointed directly to the driver, we kind of say, no, that's not what we want, right? We want to protect our driver, but let's go to the source of the flame, like Scott mentioned earlier. But let's go to that source, let's put it out. We'll let the driver's safety equipment, you know, his fire suit, his underwear, his gloves, all this stuff, bide him some time, right? So that's a common mistake we see, that you should almost point it away from the driver and go into that front area of the race car. And I know every series, every division probably has a little bit different application as far as where they can mount the bottles and whether they want to run a discharge line or just directly off the bottle. I'd say if you have the opportunity to mount it directly off the bottle with a nozzle, you're better off. And we see that a lot of time on the Xfinity cars where they can mount that bottle pretty much to the driver's right and just have a simple nozzle on the end of the bottle and then go into the source of the flame. So. Mm-hmm.
You know, Scott, David said something that I want to key in for as well. This is about buying time. You know, this is about giving someone time to get out of the car. We all know that, you know, a Nomex fire suit, you're not just going to be able to sit there in the flames. It gives you time to get out. So let's talk about that in relation to the fire system.
Sure. Well, they're called fire extinguishers. We all refer to them a lot of times as fire extinguishers. But they're fire suppression systems. I stopped short of calling it an extinguisher. They're designed to suppress a fire long enough and good enough where a driver can exit the race car or safety workers can get to the car to extinguish the fire if it continues to grow. So like I told you yesterday, I don't know anybody that's ever been in a race car fire that got out and said, you know what? I had too much agent. It was too much agent to put that fire out. They all get out and say, I wish I'd have had a bigger system. I got a friend of mine in Washington State. He's probably watching right now. I think it was in 2016. He had his late model guy in a crash and he was only the one that pulled his system. He had a 10-pound, wasn't required, but he had a 10-pound system on and his car was the only one that extinguished the fire in that car. And the driver, had he had a headsock on, he wouldn't have burned his neck. So he did get some flames and did get some fire on him, but they were running a bigger system than what he originally had wanted. And now he probably would say, I wish I had 2 10-pound systems I could have activated. So, you know, it's just one of those things where it's just another part of the safety. It's another safety piece of a race car. You should look at it the same as your helmet, the same as your gloves, your fire suit, your seat belts, your Hans, everything. It's another part of the aspect encompassing safety for a race car driver. So, but it is designed and they are made to suppress fire and to allow the driver time to get out. If they extinguish it, great. A lot of times our systems, in all the testing, they extinguish fires. And that's what you hope, but you don't know what fire is going to do. A fire can start in one small area. And like you said, with that triangle, it can go to different places. So you kind of want to make sure that you nozzle placement's important and size of system's important to get those areas hit while you're trying to get out. And I, from a driver standpoint, I get it. Those are precious seconds. There's a lot going on. You're in a hurry and you're panicking. You're trying to, like I said, you're trying to unbolt helmet blowers and radios and Hanses and belts, and you ain't got time to mess with a cable. But if you make it very simple where it's mounted, where all you got to do is pull it and you know that you're not going to gag to death getting out of the race car, then that's just a bonus. And I just think that in this day and time with these agents that are used, drivers need to be more apt to pull that pin. And I think, again, the guy in Washington State, he pulled his pin and he's glad he did. He lived to tell about it. So that's best case scenario. That's what we hope for.
Yeah. And again, giving yourself time is very important. Now, tell us about how these are rated. You were telling me yesterday about the way the SFI rates these. And I just found that fascinating.
Well, SFI tests, as I'm sure if you're watching this, you're familiar with what SFI does. They test extinguishers, seat belts, flywheels. Like I said, anything that a manufacturer wants to sell and be guaranteed as best it can that it will do its job, SFI does all this testing. And so I've gone to the facility and seen the SFI testing on extinguishers many times, and it's very eye-opening, I would say. I'm not going to tell you everything about how the test procedures go, but one of the tests is done with a very small amount of fuel, and you light the fuel, and you have to let it burn for 20 seconds, and then you activate your system to put that fire out in a certain amount of time. And it's amazing, simply amazing at how fast the fire grows and how hot the fire gets. And I'm standing just a few feet away from it, and it's 10, 12, 15 seconds in this thing. It's like, come on, are we at 20? Are we at 20? Are we at 20? We're counting down. So SFI does a great job of trying to simulate and trying to emulate what a race car fire would be, whether it be in the engine, whether it be in the fuel cell area, or whether it be in an open area. And you have to do all these tests with different size systems. But it's just, it's kind of one of those things. The first time I ever did it, I was like, wow, I never, you know, do you light a match, or you, I don't know, you crank up a stove, a gas stove, and you're like, oh yeah, that's hot. But it's kind of wild just to see how hot and how quick that fire grows. So again, I understand a driver's point. They want to get out of that. That's the worst. That's their worst fear is fire. But properly installed in a properly mounted system, it highly increases your chances of getting out of that race car and saving your equipment too. You know, years ago, we talked about too, about agents. There's some agents out there, like you get in your handheld system in your house. Those are powder. Those are chemical type based agents, and they cause a big mess. The agents we use now are very, very clean, very easy to work with. You can pour it. I've done a test where I've poured it all over my laptop or poured it on my cell phone. And then I've gone to texting and everybody's like, wow. I was like, yeah, it literally dissipates and disappears in a matter of seconds. So that's one of the advantages of the agents that we use. There are less expensive agents. There are cheaper agents, but if you accidentally set a 5-pound, which a lot of people do, hey, something happened, I accidentally set it off. Well, if they set this system off that I sell and some of my other companies sell, and within a matter of a minute, you can't even tell anything happened. So it's harmless for electronics, for your skin, for the ozone, for the atmosphere. So anyway, that's another thing too, is just putting the right system in there to do its job.
Yeah, that's a good thing. A question from the chat. What about electrical systems and sensors that recognize heat if the driver is unable to pull the cable? And maybe that applies to road racing only. I mean, we talked about the bulb and automatic systems, but not necessarily in the driver's compartment.
Yeah. Well, there's some, I don't offer an electrical activated system other than the one I do for an aircraft company, which is something totally different. But there are different, I would say sensor placement is probably important. You know, the bulb sees a certain amount of heat, and then it just, the fluid in it expands, and then it goes off and agent goes everywhere. So as far as any kind of electrical temperature sensor, there's probably somebody out there that might have something like that for maybe like a trailer or maybe like a building of some sorts. But from a race car standpoint, I guess it's one of those things where it's registering a certain amount of heat, and race cars are hot. Don't get me wrong, but I think the mindset there is just to put some sort of simple, not inexpensive, but not super expensive mechanism there to say, okay, this bulb is rated at a certain amount of degrees Fahrenheit. And as it gets hot, when that flame hits it, when it reaches that temperature, it automatically discharges. So to answer his question, I don't know a lot about the electrical aspect of extinguishers. Something I'd like to learn about, but I haven't gotten there yet.
Well, speaking of electrical, and I was going to get to this, and it's perfect timing because we have a question. EV racing, electrical vehicle racing, is coming into play. And we had a webinar last year talking about battery fires and different things like that. So what do we need to know?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something that is obviously new in racing, new in motorsports, new into the entire universe, I guess, as far as that goes, electrical vehicles. Those batteries carry a lot of amperage, a lot of power, and build a tremendous amount of heat. And there's been some instances over the last few years where extinguishing fires in those is very difficult, if not near impossible sometimes. I'm sure people have seen videos or on YouTube or something like that where, you know, an electrical vehicle catches fire and they put the fire out, and then a few minutes later, it pops back up. They put it out, it pops back up. Electricity, there's, you know, properties going on there that are continuing to activate, even though that fire and that battery might look like it's completely destroyed. There's still some stuff going on in there electrically, and it's just flash firing and catching back on fire. The agents that we use now have been approved and are perfectly good to extinguish and to help suppress electrical fires. Now, as far as something that tamps a fire down one time, once and for all, if there's one out there, I haven't run into it yet, but there might be. I just haven't run into that yet. But my system, you can put in an electrical vehicle and it will suppress the fire. Let's just put it that way. As far as the amount of agent, I'm not exactly sure, but this system here will extinguish or will suppress an electrical vehicle fire.
Yeah, it's all about giving time. David, is there anything you want to add to what we've just been kind of covering here over the last few minutes?
No, I think Scott hit the nail on the head on the electrical side of it. I know it's new to all of us, right? And we're approaching that era and that stage now as far as what we do here. One thing I did want to add, though, I think sort of put my driver's helmet back on. I think to, you know, the owners, the drivers, the people out there that's listening, I think, you know, on the average, most of our fires we've seen have been in a vehicle that's made contact with the wall, another vehicle, you know, overturned, whatever it might be. But the common denominator there is the vehicle is stopped. So I think if we look at this, and I think it's important, that's why I wanted to share it, was you now look at Jordan Anderson's situation at Talladega. Very unique as far as the vehicle still rolling at a high rate of speed, right? I know talking to Jordan, you know, he kind of smelt something. He saw a little bit of flame, then he saw more flame, and at some point in time, he kind of thought it was going to be okay, right? But you're still going awful fast. So I guess what I want to say is we have to look at all sides of it, right? We got to look at it now, more importantly than ever before, is what do we need to do when the vehicle's rolling? And especially, you know, Martinsville is one thing. The short tracks are one thing, but the speedways are totally different, right? So then that just captures everything we've talked about here, is having the proper system in the car, having it mounted correctly, having the proper 5-pound discharge, whether it be a line or a nozzle, pointing in the right direction. And then I can't emphasize enough that when that vehicle is unloaded at the racetrack, that that 5-pound safety pin is pulled out of the bottle. And I'm not saying it because we went this direction, but I really think after 5 or 6 races now into our season that it's probably a good practice to put you a small flag if the manufacturer doesn't have that with the system. It's put you a small flag on that handle pin. Make sure that handle is mounted where you can get to it, strapped in the vehicle. And then start practicing the removal of that pin when you go on track. I know a lot of our people, competitors, have not really argued, but disputed or questioned the ability for the 5-pound handle to stay in the bottle during the course of the event. Scott has a small demonstration that I know he'd be happy to share with anybody. And then we have concrete evidence that if you looked at the Daytona 500, you know, we had 40 race cars run 500 miles. We had them running into each other and getting up in the air and all kinds of stuff happening with no hint of any kind of handle movement throughout the course of the race. So that's not true if you hear that rumor. So again, to the drivers and owners and crew chiefs out there, just to put emphasis on remembering that that system is there. And it could be a simple radio communication from the spotter, from the crew chief to the driver, like, hey, you know, it looks like we have a fire. Don't forget you have that system that's there to protect you. And having all that put in the right place, the driver's made aware now, because again, I will say we were all told not to ever pull it, right? Just get out. So, but we've seen instances now where it's there for us. So that's the only thing I could add to all that. And it's a huge benefit if we were able to use that system and put it into play.
Yeah, for sure. It's no good unless you use it, right, Scott?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Like I said yesterday in our talk, it's like a handgun, whether you believe in handguns or not. It's one of those things where sometimes if you got it and you need it, you're glad you have it. If you need it and you don't have it, you wish you had it. So it's the same thing with the fire suppression system. Just they cost, they're not cheap, but what's your life worth? What's your skin worth? I mean, if you ask Jordan Anderson, you know, if you asked Jeff Knight, the guy in Washington State, there's no such thing as too little fire suppression agent and fire system in your race car. So just think of it the same as your helmet. If you're going to spend $3,000 on a custom driving suit and $1,200, $1,300 on a helmet, come on, spend less than $1,000 on something that more than likely is going to give you extra time and possibly save your life in the event of a fire in a race car.
Yeah, very well said. Very well said. Well, Scott, David, thank you so much. This was a true pleasure. And, you know, I think there are so many more things we could even continue to cover on another one of these. So we appreciate you.
Thank you very much, Brad.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you very much, Scott and David, for your time today. So great webinar. It has been recorded. It will be posted later on the ePortrait platform. We'll distribute it also through our newsletter and our different social media channel. Thank you very much for being with us today. Next week, we're going to be talking with Foggett on engine performance. So thank you very much. In the meantime, please take advantage of the ePortrait platform. We put FAC's product back on the homepage. So thank you very, very much for being with us today, and let's go racing. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
ePortrait is a digital platform that we've created basically to make life easier in the business community of auto racing.
ePortrait, there is no e-commerce. It's literally a connection just like at a trade show. So now, any time of the year, a buyer could reach out to a supplier.
When you see a product that you're interested in, all you need to do is click on the request more information, and then from there it is forwarded directly to the buyer or to the supplier.
ePortrait really eliminates having to travel, closing down your shop. Now you have a place to showcase globally your racing product and technology.
Land speed record holder George Poteet's Speed Demon rocketed 481 miles per hour at the Bonneville Salt Flats. You don't go that fast without ARP fasteners.
There is no way that we could go the speed that we've gone, the number of times we've gone, with a lesser quality bolt than ARP supplies to us. And we absolutely wouldn't be where we were today if it weren't for ARP.
When failure is not an option, it's ARP-bolts.com.
We're Performance Plus Global Logistics. Our team of dedicated performance industry and logistics experts get valuable cars and components to the track on time in top condition. We provide expedited logistics solutions for the performance industry using direct routes instead of deferred options and communicate all necessary information to the appropriate resources to meet regulations and ensure a smooth transit and secure delivery, both domestically and internationally. And we exceed customer expectations by providing best-in-class service with an efficient and cost-effective system in place. Contact us today to book your next shipment.
You work as hard as your truck, and you have no time for downtime. That's why more truck owners trust Blue Def, America's number one diesel exhaust fluid brand. Each batch is guaranteed pure, so you can avoid costly repairs caused by inferior def. Demand America's best for your truck. Blue Def and Blue Def Platinum. Put trust in your truck.
My name is Chadron Sisson. I'm one of the owners of Electrified Garage. So the ShopMonkey software is great since we have the multiple locations. We can dive into each other's location and help out with appointment taking, inventory, customer communication. I can jump into Florida and help out and make an appointment down there, and vice versa, they can make appointments down there for us up here. And then by using our inventory, they can see if we have the parts and they can get the parts ordered before the customer even comes up here.